Johnson rubbed himself as he thought of Cynthia, the black woman who had set herself up with her own crib back in Calabasas. Johnson was one of her best customers. Up in Harshaw, he was a frequent visitor to an Indian woman named Sasha. That Indian girl who'd been riding in the coach with him was prettier than either one of them. He thought of her naked, lying in the ditch, and he wished he'd gone up with McAllister to see her. He wondered if the men who took her had had their way with her.
I wonder what it would be like to be an outlaw. Completely free of all convention. Anytime I wanted a woman, I'd just take her. I wouldn't have to pay her neither. What would they call me? Johnson the Terrible. No, that's no good. Kid Johnson. Nah, that's no good either. Arnold the Outlaw. Get in there. Arnold the Evil. 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 Arnold. Yeah. Evil Arnold.
For the next several minutes, as Arnold drove the buckboard, he fantasized himself as Evil Arnold, robbing banks and holding up stagecoaches, raping women. While one of his warriors held the reins to his horse, Chautauqua slithered on his belly up to the crest of the ridge. Looking down onto the road that ran through the valley floor below, he saw a single buckboard occupied by only the driver. There appeared to be some things in the back of the wagon, though from this distance he had no idea what they were. He went back to the others and looked at the war party he had gathered. There were five of them, ranging in age from 16 to 30. Each warrior was in paint, having chosen his own particular design. Chautauqua's war paint consisted of yellow around one eye, black around the other, and three red slashes on each cheek. It hadn't been hard to gather his band. Some he had known since they were boys growing up together. Others had come to the village during the breakup of the Chiricahua. All had a thirst for adventure, and most had their own reasons to hate the white man. Early that morning, he had walked through the village, calling for all who were brave of heart. These five had joined him, while the others, especially the older men, merely stared at him from the openings of their wickiups.
Will we attack this white man, Chautauqua?
Yes. We will wait until he passes. Then, we will strike from behind.
So deep was Arnold Johnson into his fantasies that he didn't even see the Indians as they came up over the ridge and started after him. In fact, his first indication of danger was when one of them rode up right beside him on the left and another on the right. For a second, Johnson was shocked by their sudden and unexpected appearance. Then it became frightening. The team broke into a gallop. The buckboard flew down the road, leaving behind it a billowing rooster tail of dust. The Indians easily kept pace with them, and as Johnson looked left and right, he saw that they were grinning, actually enjoying his panic. He was not armed, and he had no way to fight back. As soon as the Indians realized he wasn't armed, they rode ahead of him, still one to either side, and reached down to grab the harness of his team. The Indians slowed the team, finally bringing it to a halt. Buckboard just sat there, surrounded by the swirl of dust the wheels had stirred up, as the whole war party gathered around.
What do you want? Do you want the samples? You can have them, take them!
You should not have come here!
What do you mean I shouldn't have come here? This is a public road! I'm on my way to a river cut!
Chautauqua lifted his rifle. Johnson saw them all raise their rifles as one trained at him.
What the hell? No!
Johnson slumped forward, prevented from falling only by the footrest of the buckboard. Chautauqua dismounted, drew his knife, and advanced toward the body. Grabbing the dead white man by his hair, he made the scalping cut. The others denied the scalp, took out their anger, and left their mark by further disfiguring the body.